Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for the next hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Mr. Dennis Hart.
And thank you all for joining us on this Monday, and thank you so much if you came to our birthday party yesterday. We had a good time, Ursula.
Yeah.
I saw you having a good time. I know I did. Rocky Raccoon put on a great show, the Beatles Band. The burgers were excellent, and the Strawberry Fields chocolate fondue fountain was delicious. I only lost one strawberry in there, but I picked it right back up, and it was full of chocolate. We had a big crowd. Everyone looked pretty happy. Lots to look at, eat, listen to, and we even had a dance floor, and there were a couple of folks out there dancing up a storm.
There was, yeah. And big thanks to the many, many members of the KHOI team who all came together to do the work for this. You guys did an awesome job. And to the Ames Council on the Arts for their financial support for the event.
We were lucky. We had some good weather for the outdoor concert yesterday. Tonight, not so much good weather. We're looking at showers, but from here on out, days are expected to be mostly sunny all week long, through next weekend with temperatures in the 80s, but climbing and expected to be near 90 by next weekend. But for today, take your umbrella.
Also with us today is Mike Metz, who is the host of Science Bites on KHOI, a naturalist. Nice to have you with us, Mike.
Well, thank you, Ursula.
Dennis and I have an ongoing conversation about the wild ones.
The wild ones, and we have a story today that I want to tell you, and I know you do, and Mike undoubtedly does, too.
Mike, before we go to Dennis News and before I hear your story, I have a question I want to ask you.
Okay.
Every time around this year, in August, we have a cricket in the bathroom here at KHOI. It's very loud in there. What I want to ask you is, why is there always a cricket in the bathroom in August at KHOI? Well, and what is the cricket doing in there?
Well, my first question is, why did it take till August? That's 11 months is a long time to use the bathroom, but let's...
And now he can't get out.
This time of year, things warm up, and there's about four species of crickets, if I remember right. But what he's probably doing is he's looking for a warm, moist place. He's seeking shelter. And you asked why he's chirping in there,
mm-hmm.
or why he's making his little
nonstop.
Nonstop.
Now it's interesting. Well, when it used to be that when you went into the bathroom to try and figure out where he was, he would stop.
Sure.
And so then you couldn't figure out where he was. He seems to have gotten used to us because now he doesn't stop when you go in there.
That's because he thought you were a predator, most likely at first. But since you're not a danger to him, or he assumes that, and we would say if he's the chirper, we would call him a he. Because
okay.
only the males are the ones who call. And
so the reason is doing?
That's what he's doing. He's doing that because he's trying to attract a female cricket to join him in the bathroom for nefarious, well, reproductive situation, I suppose.
So what are his chances that he's going to find a female to come and come into the bathroom as well?
Females aren't vocal like the males are, at least not in most species. So that's, I don't know what his chances are. If there's one in the area and she finds his call attractive and the habitat that they're currently in somewhat pleasing, I suppose they'll want to keep the cricket around because in some cultures, crickets are considered good luck.
Really?
And in fact, Charles Darwin wrote a novel with a cricket and the good luck cricket. And the other thing about crickets is you can use them as thermometers and... Unfortunately, I can't remember the formula for Celsius, but I suppose you could convert it from Fahrenheit to Celsius. And I think if you count the number of chirps in 15 seconds and you add 37, I think it is, you can get a very close approximation of what the outside temperature is.
I have a serious question for you. This cricket in the bathroom, will that cricket hibernate and stay there all winter? Does it die? What happens?
Most crickets... their lifespan, I think, is like 90 days. It depends on the species. I think there's some that'll live to 2 years. Good luck. Let's get back to the myths a little bit. If you find a cricket and it's chirping vigorously, supposedly, and then it stops in between, apparently that's a good indicator of financial wealth to come to the household. There's also other things for pregnancy in the household.
That may or
but,
may not
you know,
be a good thing.
I was told one time.
May or may not.
I was also told one time, or asked the question, well, if a cricket comes to your house and dies, what does that mean? And I said, well, a cricket came in and died.
Well, can I top this story?
Let's
hold that
news
one until later. Yeah. All right. Well, when, as always, there was plenty of news around Iowa last week, much of it involving the Iowa State Fair and, of course, presidential politics. So let's start with that. The annual State Fair opened Thursday in Des Moines, and hundreds of thousands of people jammed into the fairgrounds during those first few days. And given that this is the year before the Iowa caucuses and the presidential election, those visitors included numerous Democrats who want to replace Donald Trump in the Oval Office and who showed up at the Des Moines Register's political soapbox at the fair to talk to the crowds for their allotted 20 minutes apiece. On the fair's opening day, Montana Governor Steve Bullock was up first, followed by Vice President Joe Biden. On Friday, five more Democratic candidates appeared at the soapbox, and on Saturday, the soapbox was jammed with nine candidates. Yesterday, there were five more. Meanwhile, at the Iowa Events Center in downtown Des Moines on Saturday, 16 of those Democratic hopefuls attended a gun safety forum. Several others sent video messages. They all talked about their plans to address gun violence, ranging from closing gun purchase loopholes to a potential amendment to the U.S. Constitution. All the candidates agreed that Republicans have kept the federal government from moving forward with gun legislation because of pressure from the National Rifle Association. Meanwhile, Iowa's three Democratic representatives in the U.S. House called for the Senate to convene and vote on background checks for anyone wanting to purchase a gun. Congresswomen Cindy Axne and Abby Finkenauer, along with Congressman Dave Lobsack, issued statements urging Senate action. Meanwhile, Iowa's Republican U.S. senators also weighed in after those mass shootings in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio. Chuck Grassley said he would support a federal plan for red flag laws, which could remove guns from individuals who pose a threat to themselves or to others. Joni Ernst said she was open to reviewing any plans that would, in her words, have a real and positive impact. There was other political news as well last week, news not involving the race for president. Democrat J.D. Scholten announced that he's going to try it again, try to defeat Republican 4th Congressional District incumbent Steve King in next year's election. Scholten lost to King last year, as you'll recall. He said his campaign priorities would be the same this time around, fixing health care and supporting farmers. Also word that Democrat Ross Wilburn had won a special election to join the Iowa House. Wilburn ran unopposed in his bid for the House District 46 seat. He replaces Democrat Lisa Heddens, who resigned after she was appointed to the Story County Board of Supervisors. Meanwhile, there was word last week that two high-profile voter advocacy groups had sent a letter to Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate, telling him that the state's rejection of ballots from people who had been misidentified as felons violated federal law. That letter came from the Brennan Center for Justice and from the League of Women Voters. A lawyer for the Brennan Center said the state could face a civil action in federal court if it doesn't act within 90 days. Now for the never-ending saga involving the former director of Iowa's Department of Human Services, Jerry Foxhoven. Last week, in a new round of events, Governor Kim Reynolds' office said that it was withholding confidential complaints related to the case. Foxhoven has said that he was forced out for whistleblowing. The governor has denied that, saying many factors played a role in her decision to ask for his resignation. As I say every week at this time, stay tuned. There was also word last week that voters in five Iowa cities had approved a 1 cent local option sales tax. The tax hike would take effect next January 1st in Bondurant, Clive, Grimes, Johnston, and Urbandale. It will bring in more than $13 million next year. Also last week, a report that the Iowa Methodist Medical Center had decided to settle lawsuits from scores of patients who had suffered needless pain because a hospital employee had stolen their liquid painkillers and replaced them with water. The lawsuits were filed by 255 patients at the Des Moines Hospital in 2016 after pharmacy technician Victor Van Cleve was fired when he admitted stealing the medications. Van Cleve was addicted to opioids. There was also a report that the state of Iowa had agreed to pay $100,000 to settle a case involving a child who allegedly had been placed in a chokehold by a now-retired Iowa patrolman. The case involved Lamont O'Neill, whose age has never been revealed. Authorities said he was placed in a chokehold by former Iowa State Patrol Captain Randy Jones during a chaotic incident in Cedar Rapids. There was a new development last week in an ongoing crime story in Iowa. The lawyers representing the man accused of killing Iowa University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts added to their argument that their client's rights were violated when he was questioned by law enforcement. Lawyers for defendant Christian Bahena Rivera submitted a document to the court arguing that he should have been put into contact with the Mexican consulate early during his interview with authorities and that his rights were not fully read to him by authorities. Near Oskaloosa last week, Iowa sheriff's deputies found a woman's body in the South Skunk River one day after she had been reported missing. She was identified as 24-year-old Ashley Schaefer. In Nevada, a mobile home fire resulted in the death of a woman last week. The blaze broke out at the Home Acres Mobile Home Park. The victim identified as 27-year-old Caitline Pratt. In Ames, police arrested a staff member at the Story County Boys and Girls Club after he allegedly showed pornography to children. 18-year-old Bobby Chase of Ames was fired from the club after his arrest. Still in Ames, police were searching for the man who robbed a convenience store and tied up the clerk. The robbery took place at Doc's Stop on East 13th Street near I-35. A man wearing black clothes and a black hoodie got away with an unspecified amount of money after tying up the clerk, who suffered minor injuries. Police warned other store clerks in the area to be on the alert. There was a troubling report last week that firefighters in Clinton had been told there was no explosion hazard at a grain silo just before an explosion killed one firefighter and injured another one. The report from the state's Occupational Safety and Health Administration also said that officials at Archer Daniels Midland had slowed the rescue time of the injured firefighter by failing to communicate basic details about the silo. Meanwhile, a religious activist who was accused of burning four LGBTQ children's books that he had checked out of an Iowa library was convicted of criminal mischief. 63-year-old Paul Robert Doerr was also ordered to pay $125 in fines and court costs. Last year, he had posted a video on Facebook in which he denounced the Orange City Library for having the books. Then he threw them into a burning barrel. Also worried about another case last week, the lawyer for a former Iowa official who had sued the state for discrimination and won was said to be seeking $4 million for fees and costs. Roxanne Conlon represented State Workers' Compensation Commissioner Chris Godfrey in the case, which took seven years to get to trial. Last month, the jury awarded Godfrey $1.5 million after finding that former Governor Terry Branstad had discriminated against Godfrey because he is gay. And there was a report that the Warren County project to build a new justice center and courthouse came in way overbid. Warren County voters had approved a nearly $30 million bond issue for the project last year, but bids to build it exceeded $37 million. And that left just about everyone in a tizzy. Meanwhile, the YMCA of Greater Des Moines said it needed money help to operate the Indianola YMCA. The Y has asked the city of Indianola, the school district, and Simpson College for a combined $261,000, but so far only the city has offered money to support the facility. That request came just 5 months after the Des Moines Y closed its Ankeny facility because of money troubles and declining membership. In yet another story involving money, the company that owns the Perkins restaurant chain and the Marie Callender's chain filed for bankruptcy last week. The company said it would likely sell both its Perkins business and Marie Callender's. That announcement came one day after 19 of the Callender's locations and 10 Perkins sites were closed for good across the nation. Meanwhile, two of the biggest newspaper companies in the nation announced a very big deal indeed last week. Gatehouse Media, which owns the Ames Tribune, the Nevada Journal, the Boone News Republican, the Story City Herald, the Tri-County Times, and many other newspapers around the country, announced that it would buy Gannett, the company that owns the Des Moines Register. The purchase price, $1.4 billion. The new combined company will still be known as Gannett, and it will own more than 250 daily newspapers and hundreds of weeklies. Now, no one's sure what's going to happen at those newspapers, but executives at both Gatehouse and Gannett said they plan to cut $300 million in expenses each year at the new combined company. And the way they've done that in the past? Layoffs. Stay tuned. And finally, here's a story that electrified baseball fans all around Iowa and around the nation last week. Major League Baseball announced that a game would be played in Dyersville, Iowa next August, next to the Field of Dreams. That's right, the Field of Dreams. Kevin Costner's movie made it famous three decades ago. An 8,000-seat ballpark is going to be built near the field for the game. And guess who's going to play in it? None other than the New York Yankees and the Chicago White Sox. Absolutely amazing. It's going to be the first Major League Baseball game ever played in Iowa. And yes, it is going to count in the standings. And yes, tickets will be at a premium. And yes, I want two of them. Please. Would that be heaven? Yes, that would be Iowa. And that's your summary of a busy week of news indeed from around Iowa.
The dog days of summer, a hound and us again. Out in the sun, you know it's hot as sin. Here on the porch, there's shade and a breeze. A couple guitars some sweet iced tea. Yes, please, come and play with me. Kick off your shoes and let's jump right in. If we get off, we'll get it on again. Pick up the rhythm, carry a tune. We'll dance away these summertime blues. Jam away these summertime blue, blue, blue. Getting down with the groove. Baby, boom, boom, boom. Kids run through the sprinkler. You put ice down my back. Hair stuck to my forehead underneath this ball cap. It's gonna be a hot one. We're taking what we get. Yeah, we work it out, even soaking wet. You bet, I'll take your request. Kick off your shoes and let's jump right in. If we get off, we'll get it on again. Pick up the rhythm, carry a tune. We'll dance away these summertime blues. Jam away these summertime blue, blue, blue. Getting down with the groove. Baby, boom, boom, boom. Guitar.
Dance Away the Summer Blues by KHOI volunteer Tammy Havlick and Larry Stoltenberg, otherwise known as Red. Thank you, Mr. Dennis Hart. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg. Mike Metz is here as well. Mike, you were in Michigan.
Yes, I was. I was Isle Royale National Park, which you couldn't at first realize why it's in Michigan because it's a lot closer to Thunder Bay, Ontario, and Minnesota, but it is a national park and wilderness area and also received a UN a biosphere designation back in 1981. So it's a great place for folks to canoe, hike, camp, and a lot of research opportunities.
So what wild animals did you see up there?
There were a number. Moose and wolf are probably its most famous study. But I was up there. I've been involved in a survey for the common loon for the last 30 years. And so every season for a couple of weeks, I go up and help do a survey on the juvenile loons.
That must have been really wonderful.
It was a lot of fun. You get out. People ask me, how do you count loons? And I go, one, two, three. But seriously, we look for family groups, and we're specifically interested in the juveniles.
And how do you tell it's a juvenile?
Juveniles have a lot different plumage. They're smaller than the adults at this time of year, of course, and they're not as developed. And they can't fly yet.
Do they call like the adults?
The adults have four basic calls. Mm-hmm. The juveniles have their own little special sets of calls, kind of like kids. It's like, I want to be fed, or where are you, or help, help. Types of calls. They sound almost like little seagulls. Uh-huh. And, of course, I say seagulls because if the gull flew across the bay, they'd be bagels.
Oh, yay, yay. Okay. Mike, what do you...
Do they float around on the water like the
parents? They do. In fact, they go through a couple of molts. The first couple are downy, and molt means changing their feathers.
Uh-huh.
But in the younger couple of weeks, they're like little bobbers, and they can hardly dive, but they're very capable of floating and swimming.
That's very cute. You were out in a boat, or how did you do it?
Canoe and on foot.
Oh, that's very nice. So how many did you count?
All of them, but seriously. juvenile numbers for us, there are 54 bodies of water on the island. It's a 45-mile-long island by about 9 miles wide. And of those, I'd say about 45 to 50 are capable of having the habitat for common loons. Uh-huh. And we get to about half of those.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Adults for that area, there's, depending upon the lake, there's different territories on how the lake is put together, if it has coves, peninsulas, and that. But most territories, I'd say about a third of the territories had young this year. which is anywhere from one to two birds. Mm-hmm. Others, there'd be adults, but they didn't have young.
And they're quite shy?
It depends on the area and how often they're exposed to human influences. So some are very shy and protective, mm-hmm. others not so. Some mm-hmm. you can approach right with your canoe. Others are curious and they'll come right up to you, mm-hmm. but some will stand off.
That's a beautiful way to spend an early August week.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. That's a beautiful image to carry with me. Mike, talk a little bit about your show for a minute.
Yeah, Science Bites, which is Tuesdays at 4:30 to 5. Sam Wormley and I co-host that program. And because I was up at Isle Royale, and I've also been to a couple other places, we kind of went on hiatus as far as new produced programs, but we picked a couple of listener favorites to rebroadcast while we were gone, and just want to assure the listeners that we will have some fresh programs starting here in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
So,
thank you. Well, I enjoy your show a lot.
Thank you
for your show.
And that was a better story than the crickets earlier in the broadcast.
What's your story, Dennis?
Yeah, Mike, I'm sure you're familiar with raccoons, and they can be smart and they can come after you. We were living in Walnut Creek, California. This is a few years ago, and I've told this story, I think, a couple of years ago on the radio station. It's nighttime. I'm sleeping, and I hear the garbage cans go over in the patio. So I go out, and I have no shoes on because it's nighttime, and I was sleeping 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And sure enough, the garbage can in the patio is overturned, and I see what looks like a raccoon tail dredging in the thing. So I start yelling at it, get out of there, get out of there. And that was a mistake because it was a mama raccoon, and she had her babies there. She turned on me, and I mean came after me, as if you're nothing, I'm going to eat your feet off right now. And the babies are right behind her, and I literally screamed, "Oh, my God!" And I ran back in the house, slammed the door, and the raccoon pounded right up against the door, coming after me, against the door.
She was mad.
She was mad. She thought I was going to come after the babies, and she was coming after me. And my wife wakes up, "What's going on?" And I said, "I nearly got attacked by a raccoon." And she's laughing, right? So here's my question, Mike. That raccoon, had it gotten to me, because I had no shoes on, would have attacked me, right? Would have come after me?
It would have taken a bite at you.
Yeah.
Their teeth, they're like
they
little
can
canines.
Hurt you.
Exactly.
They can hurt you.
Yeah.
Well, that same raccoon and the family, not to be too graphic, got into a cage that we had outside with a rabbit, our pet rabbit, and took care of the rabbit. They have claws that can actually, and we had a little latch on there. It opened the latch. It's unbelievable.
They can manipulate
things.
They're very dexterous.
That actually happened.
Yeah, I believe it. They're omnivores. They're generalists. So they are. They'll eat pretty much anything that's edible,
including
if given
toes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I hope you called a tow truck.
You know, well, I did, but they just sent me out an old shoe. So you know, he couldn't help me. Thank you so much. It's Monday.
Well, if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Mr. Dennis Hart and Mike Metz. Thank you for joining us, Mike.
You're welcome.
On Science Bites.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, for all your good help there.
Save a few of your jokes for your radio show. As you well know, this past weekend was Soapbox Weekend at Iowa State Fair, so all of the presidential candidates were here in central Iowa. And many of them scheduled smaller meetings in smaller venues while they were here as well as a forum on gun violence in Des Moines. And KHOI reporters have been rising to the occasion. We are actually on the verge of launching a new national show coming out of KHOI that'll be distributed through Pacifica Network and Public News Service, another nonprofit news service. And this show will be a daily 3-minute update on what's happening in Iowa. And we're probably going to air it right before Local Talk in the morning and right after Local Talk at around 1 o'clock. So watch for that. We're real excited about it. We've hired a reporter especially for that. But the Local Talk team, including our engineer here this morning, Cynthia McClure, have really been knocking themselves out all weekend getting these recordings. Cal Halliburton, Joy B., my sister Annette. We've had like a whole team out there. Many, many, many issues are being discussed. That's what's really kind of comes out of this. What we've witnessed is the large variety of issues they've discussed. One thing that we don't hear a lot but has really been part of U.S. news now for quite a while has been just the issues of young people, protection and health of young people. This was brought up in Nevada yesterday by Charlie Bruner, who's a former state senator representing Story County, and he has an organization called Caucus for Kids. Cynthia, would you play the interview I had with Charlie?
The Caucus for Kids is over 30 organizations which serve children in the child welfare, educational, healthcare field, or that advocate on their behalf. And we've come together to try to raise the issue of children as our future and its need to be an important policy issue in political campaigns. So we're asking all presidential candidates to speak out on and develop platforms about children. But we're asking basic questions around what are you going to do to improve children's health? What are you going to do to improve their school readiness? What are you going to do to provide equal opportunity? How are you going to ensure that children are safe and secure in their homes?
Is this something that you feel is being overlooked if you don't really make it an issue with your organization?
Yes. While America has been the land of opportunity, today, for too many children, there are real barriers to their achieving their full success. It's not the hot button issue that people gravitate toward, but there's tremendous concern among the public around what the future holds for our kids and how we can ensure that all kids, regardless of their zip code, their race and ethnicity, their socioeconomic status, have a real opportunity to succeed, and how we can build systems that really do support that.
How is your organization going about bringing this conversation to the table?
We're having Facebook chats with presidential candidates, which we're having live streamed and available, and then simply using our membership of the different 30 organizations to attend events, to ask candidates questions, raise those issues.
So you're here today at an event in Nevada, a small event at a coffee shop, and your mission was to raise that question during the event.
Right, and Governor Inslee did, I thought, give a very compelling answer that showed a lot of passion and knowledge about the needs of kids. And we're finding that from more and more candidates. And it's sort of, I think, child policy issues have come of age. They are something people care deeply about. I think it really is an issue. And now,
you're called Caucus for Kids. Are you a specifically Iowa organization?
Yes, we're a specific Iowa organization in the Children's Policy Coalition of 30-plus Iowa organizations. Well, we hope that what we're doing here will really encourage and set the groundwork for people in other states to do the same thing. And
So you're modeling that here.
Right. And what we want to do is have them do what we're doing as both the primary season goes forward and in the general election.
And will you be bringing platforms to the caucuses on caucus night?
Yes, I think we will be asking people to go to their caucuses with specific platform measures around kids. And as again, it's their safety, their economic security, their school readiness, and their equal opportunity for success.
And will your organization be endorsing a candidate by caucus tonight? Will they all be going to the caucuses with the same candidate?
No, we're really explicitly nonpartisan and not picking a candidate. What we want to do is have all candidates address this issue. We're issue-based.
That was Charlie Bruner, former state senator, talking about Caucus for Kids. But we've had the great pleasure of actually starting to meet young people themselves who are going to the caucuses. A beautiful aspect of the caucus process that we are encountering as we go out reporting on these smaller meetings around Story County. Here's an example of one young man, Thomas Sauer, and he is speaking with Governor Inslee in Nevada.
My number one concern is climate change. It affects the whole world. The number one reason why I didn't like Trump is because he didn't believe in climate change. So what specific plans are you to reduce climate change, and what will you do to get China to reduce their impact on the world?
Well, t-
Thomas, what was your last name?
Sauer.
Sauer?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you might have heard somebody ask who was going to be my Secretary of State. I said Megan Rapinoe. But now I know who's going to be our Secretary of Energy. It's Thomas Sauer.
Thomas Sauer, and I actually did get an interview with him.
I'm Thomas Sauer. I live in Nevada.
You have been going to some of the caucus meetings with candidates.
Yes.
So I saw you at Time Out. You were at Tim Ryan's and you had a question for him. What were you asking him about there?
About high schoolers, they get very tired. I did my research for that, and I found many good reasons why it's a serious case.
And you felt somebody who was running for president should consider that?
Or at least look into the situation.
About young people getting enough sleep, right? About their health.
Yes.
Were you satisfied with his answer?
I never knew that they were actually working on it. And it kind of satisfies me that they're at least looking into it, not just ignoring it and putting it to the side. So I was satisfied with that answer.
So he informed you that people are actually concerned about that topic of young people getting enough sleep?
Yes.
Are you planning to go to a lot of candidate meetings?
Probably most of them, because I want to have a good understanding of who I want, because I used to just kind of see on the news what they think and to be like, oh, I kind of, this guy has some good views. I have a good feeling with him, but now I'm actually going to the meetings and seeing more in detail of what they're really about.
One could say you're not a voting age yet.
No.
So why does it matter to you?
It matters to me to at least be aware of my surroundings and to kind of know what I want in a president, to see and learn more about it so when I am at the voting age, I can do it properly.
So you think about it in terms of preparing yourself to be a voter.
Yes, and understanding my surroundings of the president we have and the political views they have and the governments and just everything around me.
So by hearing you say that it also helps you understand the world around you, that it gives you a better understanding about, you know, where you're living?
Yes, it does.
Do you always have questions prepared when you go to these events?
There is one that I always remember to ask. What are you going to do about the debt ceiling?
The debt ceiling?
Yes.
Why that question?
It's about how it'll affect our generation. It's bad because we'll have a bad retirement and we will have to pay debt with other nations and we'll have to pay it off and it's not going to be a good retirement for us.
So you're worried about the financial security of the country when you become an adult?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You even go as far as to worry about your retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think about your retirement?
Sometimes.
How do you go about doing the research to be able to ask a question like that?
The debt ceiling I learned about from a parent.
Uh-huh. So you discuss politics or these issues with your parents?
Sometimes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you like doing that?
Yes, I do. To be honest, I've been kind of starting to feel like I don't really care if it's Democratic or Republican, really. I've been just kind of starting to feel like both sides are kind of equal or something.
So what's your priority? What do you look for?
Good ideas, good plans, and they're not saying like, we'll fix that, but they're not saying how or what they're going to do to fix it.
So you're evaluating people based on the issues and how well you think they'll lead, not on which party they're in?
No, not anymore.
How would you describe how it feels to be thinking about who's going to be president?
When I think about who's going to be president, it gives me a kind of cool feeling about, I kind of like this guy. This guy is cool. And the only time I might maybe worry is when a person actually be becomes president. I don't think really anyone really worries about candidates until they're actually elected.
Well, when somebody's a candidate, the voters have a big effect on the candidate.
Yeah.
But when the candidate becomes a president, that person has a big effect on the voter, right?
Yeah. It's kind of where you live now, and so you kind of have to accept it, but kind of just sit back and watch.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's very important to hear the opinions of some of your age because this is your future, so it's relevant. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thomas Sauer, who lives in Nevada and is a candidate greeter and watcher. Jack Spence, who is also from Nevada, and he's here in the studio with us. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Thanks for having me. I'm Jack Spence from Nevada, Iowa. I moved here when I was 9 or something.
Mm-hmm. And you're 12, right? Is that right?
Almost.
Almost 12. Uh-huh. So, Jack, tell us a little bit what you've been doing in regards to the caucuses.
I have been watching and listening to the live debates, and I also have been going to coffee with the candidate in Nevada.
Do you have a particular question that you ask all of them? Or?
So just outside Nevada, there's 3 hog confinements being built, and people are worried about air and water quality. So I like asking, how are you going to make farmers and cities find a solution about it?
And are you finding a variety of responses from the candidates?
I've been hearing a lot of, I'm going to try to, like, make pollution not so bad.
I've heard you once ask this question. I think you asked that to Tim Ryan when I first met you.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually spoke up against hog confinement lots.
Yeah.
Because he was interested in alternative forms of agriculture. Are you finding that the candidates are very varied on their position on that?
I think some don't want huge ones, but some are not against it.
Do you find that they are prepared to answer you?
Normally, I don't think they're prepared, but...
You kind of catch them a little bit off guard with, mm-hmm. it's more of a local question,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it important for you? You're not a voter yet, mm-hmm. obviously. You're not of age. So why would you say that it's important to other people and to you that you be part of this process of meeting with candidates?
When we get older and we need to vote, that we don't, like, when we're 18, we don't end up finding out, oh, I can vote and have no clue what anybody stands for.
You're preparing yourself to be a voter, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I think kids should get listening to people about it. My dad puts on these shows, so I have to go help set up.
Yeah, it needs to be said, your father, Luke Spence, is often the host of these events.
Yeah.
So is that like, oh, I got to go, you know, I got to go work with him? Or is it like, oh, this is a really good opportunity?
Yeah, it's like a good opportunity. Yeah.
You like it. I'm speaking with Jack Spence. He's from Nevada, and he's been a caucus goer, or not a caucus goer, but you're going to the events
mm-hmm.
where the candidates are coming. Are you planning to go to the caucus, too?
Yeah.
Do you have a candidate yet? Who's your short list?
I like Steve Bullock and Inslee, and then I've liked Bernie Sanders a lot.
What did you like about each of them?
Steve Bullock has a history of working with Democrats and Republicans and, like, getting stuff to work.
You like the bipartisanship?
Yeah, and then same thing with Inslee.
And what about Sanders?
I like him just because he's a good speaker and he gets to the point.
Jack Spence is here in the studio with us. Thank you for joining us. Last word before you...
I'd like to talk about another reason I got into politics is my uncle ran for Congress in Kansas. The big thing that I got about that is I got to door knock for him. Bernie Sanders also did an event for him and I got to hear him talk.
Uh-huh. Got you into politics.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming in. Please come back and give us your opinions later on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we'll be having a lot of the audio from these events with the candidates on the KHOI website as soon as we're able to process all the sound that we gathered. Today is KHOI's actual birthday. On August 12th, 2012, KHOI went on the air officially for the first time as a radio station Congratulations to Roger Parmander, who pioneered KHOI, providing the funding and the hard work necessary to apply to the Federal Communications Broadcast for 89.1, our frequency. And congratulations to the many, many, many folks here in Central Iowa who have invested their time, money, talent, goodwill, and creativity to make community radio possible in Central Iowa. Congratulations. It's a great accomplishment, and we are hoping for another 100 years of great radio.
Hello, if you have just joined us, where have you been? This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm still Dennis Hart, and she's Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator, normally joins us at this time of the month, but he wasn't able to make it today, so he got together with KHOI reporter Susan Franzen last week to record his message. He brought Jessica Bullock, Coalition for Disaster Recovery Coordinator, to talk about how you can volunteer in times of emergencies or disasters. And he started the talk with Susan by introducing Jessica.
Coalition for Disaster Recovery Coordinator. She's a special person that goes out there and tries to find volunteers to help us out in times of disaster, train them up, and then if we have a disaster, Jessica over here is going to be the one that is going to try and organize them and get them out to the site and help out communities that are hit by disasters.
Oh, well, it sounds like a pretty big job, Jessica. Are you at all intimidated by this?
A little bit.
Have you been at it for a long time?
No, I haven't. I'm fairly new to it. I'm currently in school for emergency management still, and the most experience I've got really is coming from Marshalltown with the tornado from last summer.
Oh, well, so you've had some real disaster experience.
Helping out and kind of recruiting volunteers out in Marshalltown is where I started.
And is recruiting volunteers difficult?
Not in the immediate aftermath of a disaster. There's lots of people that want to come forward and help. It's in the months that come afterwards where the disaster is not quite as fresh in their minds anymore that it gets a little more challenging.
Well, what kinds of jobs do volunteers have?
There's anything from running volunteer reception centers, which is where all volunteers who help in disasters would be processed to help track their hours and to make sure that there's no injuries while they're out volunteering in the community. So we need volunteers that can staff those reception centers. We need volunteers that can go out and help clean up debris that's left in yards. In flooding, there's a lot of water damage inside homes, and so that's called mucking and gutting, where they just go in and take out the wet damaged property from homeowners. There can be needs with animals that have been lost or abandoned in times of disaster. We need people that can do animal sheltering assistance, food and donation management is helpful as well.
Are the volunteers for one disaster likely to be the same people or the same skill set, the volunteers for another disaster?
Every disaster is different. There are similarities. There's always donation management needs. Lots of people like to give in times of disaster, so donations management is a big one that stays pretty along the lines of each disaster, as well as food distribution and some sort of cleanup, whether it's mucking and gutting or sandbagging for flooding or debris cleanup.
Well, this is a question for Keith. Presumably, you have seen a lot more disasters than Jessica. So how would you describe what people who are thinking about volunteering in the future, what kind of disasters have we had?
Well, we've had flooding. A couple of years ago, we had it where over 100 homes here in Story County, the Ames area, actually, had a lot of basement flooding. Flooding and damage you couldn't see from the outside. But yet we still had some folks that if we had had this better organized, could have used some of these folks to go in and help them get the stuff on out. We had what we called the derecho in the southern part of the county that's about 8 years ago, high winds event where there was a lot of debris to be picked up. So we have those regularly, but we want to be prepared for all of them. And a key part about this is we do get a lot of volunteers the day of. But believe it or not, there is a right and a wrong way to do sandbagging. There's safety considerations when it comes to how to do debris pickup. You can imagine all of the specialized training we need for pet sheltering. And the key is to get organizations and people to sign up early so that we can give them the training beforehand.
Well, as I recall, you have also had disaster volunteers for traffic disasters in the wintertime.
Yes. One of the first ones that we developed was called our RATS, the Rapid Action Teams for Sheltering, that are in the local area, have been trained on how to do sheltering so that if we had I-35 closed, even without an accident, and we didn't have enough hotel rooms, we could start the sheltering. And then the concept is that an organization such as the Red Cross that has more experiences, more resources, would come on in afterwards. But it's expandable to meet our needs for all scales of disasters.
Well, Jessica, what do you do when there isn't a disaster?
So when there's not a disaster, that's kind of our time to get as much training and recruiting in as possible so that we're ready when the disaster does happen. So right now we're focusing on trying to find volunteers that can fill in some of those gaps, like with animal sheltering, and getting groups who are trained and ready to go out if there was a need for debris management to clean up neighborhoods. So we can do the training now. Like Keith mentioned, there's a right way to sandbag. There's a right way to separate debris and get it to the streets. There's a right way to lift when you're doing those cleanups. So right now we try and gather those groups and get them assigned to get those lists that we can maintain so we can train those people and have them ready to go when we need to call on them.
Have you ever had a large fire that qualified as a disaster in Iowa?
Yes, we have. Actually, we've had two right here in Ames. Both of them involved the apartment complexes that we have near the university. One of them we had over, if I remember right, it was 90 units that was affected. And it took quite a bit of coordination. Again, the Red Cross was a part of that, Salvation Army. All of the agencies came together so that we could meet the needs of those that had been displaced, to include donations management as one of those things that we did. And that's the sort of stuff. It needs to be adaptable. And that's where Jessica's role is vital, to set up that structure so that not only are they there, they're trained, we can get hold of them quickly, we can give them the information that they need so that they can get out there and start to help the citizens out in the community.
Well, while we're still on the topic of fires, I know that a lot of our small outlying communities have volunteer fire departments, and they cooperate. Of course, these are relatively small fires because, of course, they have, you know, problems bringing water. But I wonder, do you have any collaboration with the smaller communities, for example, with their fire departments or any disasters they might have?
We participate with what's called the Fire Chiefs Association, which covers all of the fire departments across Story County. And additionally, we also work with the Emergency Medical Services Association. So those are well organized and much more structured. So we work with them to gather what their needs are and to help them be better. We're facilitating what's called a mutual aid agreement to allow these fire departments to work together in a structured environment.
Well, now, are first responders considered part of emergency management, or is that more a medical?
No, the emergency management is focused on trying to make it so that these independent agencies and jurisdictions, the cities, can all work together. Plus, we try to make sure that fire can work well with EMS, that can work well with law enforcement. So we interjurisdictional and interdisciplinary is what we focus on. We don't own it. We're a facilitator.
Okay. And you have a lot to facilitate.
A lot of different – when you look across all of the – because we're planning across all of the different potential incidents that could occur, plus looking at all of these different disciplines, there's not a day when I don't learn something new.
Are there any disasters that you know about that Story County hasn't ever experienced?
There hasn't been a volcano. We haven't had an earthquake or a meteorite. Doesn't mean that we don't at least consider it and reject it. But, you know, you look at an earthquake, while Iowa isn't vulnerable to them, there is the New Madrid earthquake fault that is down by St. Louis and the Memphis area. Even though we may not have the shaking up here, the impacts of that would be felt up here in disruption to the critical infrastructure, or us just absorbing people that might be refugees, which is, again, where we'd need a lot of volunteers.
Jessica, is there any way that people who are interested in volunteering can get in touch with you?
Yes. I have a work cell phone. The phone number is 515-231-2800, and my email is storycountyiowacdr@gmail.com.
And are there any things that people should know before they call?
No, we will take virtually anyone for volunteering. Whether you have a specialized skill or not, there's definitely a place where we can look to plug you in.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you've been talking with Keith Morgan and Jessica Bullock.
This is Local Talk. You're Ursula Rudenberg. I'm Dennis Hart. And Mike is still here.
Public. First, during one of these interludes, I went into the restroom to try to spot that cricket.
Uh-huh.
And all I could find was his business card. And on the card, it actually talks a little bit about the connection between Buddy Holly and the Crickets. And the Beatles, of course, were inspired to pick their name. And then with Rocky Raccoon and Dennis's raccoon story.
Uh-huh.
See, there's all a convoluted connection.
Well, night before last, I drove up to the house. It was at night, and my car parks right in front of a garden gate, you know, that stands about four feet high.
Uh-huh.
And so I pull up to that, and my headlights are shining on the gate. This big raccoon, he pops up like a puppet. On the other side of the gate, his head comes up, and he looks at the car, and it's because I, you know, with the electric thing, I had opened the garage door.
Uh-huh.
So he pops up, and it doesn't seem to bother him that the headlight is shining right on his face, and then he climbs up to the top of the fence, and he walks across the hood of my car.
Really?
To go down and go into the garage, because he wants to go in the garage because he thinks
it's open.
Exactly.
And
he thinks there's food in it.
You're still in the car, right?
Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, like human being here, car, you know. And he's just like, excuse me. So, okay.
Well,
so
that's quite the ending to the show.
Yeah, so you've been listening to Local Talk, and we've been your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Dennis Hart, and Mike Metz as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember the KHOI streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD The Ballad of Kay Shelley. You also heard Dance Away the Summer Blues, a premier performance by Tammy Havlik. and Larry Stoltenberg, volunteers and musicians extraordinaire here at KHOI.
And Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on down, join the Local Talk team. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again
on the radio.